Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Smashy Business Show. Today is April 3. It's Thursday. It's 2025. We're into the second quarter of the year. And I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Warid Ahmed, and we have a great show for you today. Now, for today's headlines, we're going to be covering how Trump has imposed reciprocal tariffs on the UAE, Saudi Arabia, and the Middle East, and the entire world. Now, the founder of the Damac Group, Hussein Sejuani's wealth has just doubled, according to Forbes, to $10.2 billion. And thirdly, Uber and WeRide have partnered with the RTA to bring self-driving taxis to Dubai. And finally, Egypt's richest man, Nassef Suarez, moves to Italy.
And four stories today, and we're not doing a CTA for stay with us till the end, because you are going to stay with us till the end, because the biggest story of today is Trump has imposed reciprocal tariffs on UAE, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Lebanon, Syria, all the Middle Eastern countries. Nearly a list of 180 countries was published by the White House. So in a major shakeup to global trade, his U.S. President Donald Trump has announced sweeping new tariffs impacting imports from the UAE, Saudi Arabia, and several other countries. Speaking from the White House Rose Garden, Trump outlined a universal 10% tariff on all imports into the United States effective April 5. Very easily, it means that this 10% is applied on every country. Then, Trump defended the move as reciprocal, responding to what he claims are unfair trade practices. The new tariffs have already sent shockwaves across global market.
Now, the reciprocal tariffs taking effect on April 9 will hit certain Middle Eastern countries extremely hard, including Egypt, Lebanon, and Yemen. Now, 10% tariffs, 10% tariffs were placed on all of these countries specifically, and there is 20% tariffs that were basically placed on Jordan, and there was 28% tariffs that were placed on Tunisia, and finally, Syria had the highest with a 41% tariff. Now, essential commodities like energy and minerals unavailable in the U.S. will be exempt, while the GCC exports over $30 billion to the U.S. annually. Experts say the economic impact will be limited. However, political ramifications could arise as Trump prepares for his May visit to Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Qatar, as we previously told you about, which is going to be his first foreign trip of his second term.
Meanwhile, the global economic fallout is becoming evident. Asian markets, when the world woke up, the other side of the world woke up, Asian markets stumbled with Japan's Nikkei hitting an 8-month low. Last, we saw a very big low from the Nikkei in August last year. European stock futures also fell, with the US market erasing nearly $5 trillion in value since mid-February. China, already facing a 20% tariff from Trump's previous measures, is now hit with an additional 34%. Beijing has strongly condemned the move and is considering countermeasures. One of their ministers tweeted about it as well. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent of the US has urged countries not to retaliate. I don't know how they will do it, but he's told them not to retaliate, warning that further escalation could trigger inflation and slow economic growth worldwide.
Now, Trump's decision is also affecting those close to U.S. allies. Now, the European Union will be subjected to a 20% tariff, while Japan faces a 24% duty. Now, Tokyo has called the decision regrettable and is exploring options for a response. Now, economists warn that the tariffs could push many economies into recession. Now, according to Fitch Ratings, the U.S. effective import tax rate has surged from 2.5% in 2024 to 22%, a level last seen in the 1900s. Now, critics argue that American consumers will bear the brunt of rising costs, with some forecasting thousands of dollars in added expenses per household.
And domestically, in the U.S., the tariff and in the American region, the tariff move has sparked political divisions also. Earlier, the U.S. Senate voted 51-48 to overturn Trump's tariffs on Canadian goods, with some Republicans breaking ranks also. However, the legislation is unlikely to pass the House. Trump's top economic advisor, Stephen Miran, admitted there would be short-term bumps, but insisted the tariffs would ultimately strengthen the U.S. economy. Before the reciprocal tariffs, Trump also signed an order ending the de minimis trade loophole, which allowed duty-free imports under $800 from China and Hong Kong, a move aimed at curbing fentanyl trafficking into the U.S.
Now, the business community is bracing for further trade disruptions. European leaders have expressed concern over a potential trade war that could weaken Western economies while benefiting global competitors. Now, Italy's Prime Minister Meloni emphasized the need for negotiations to prevent further escalation. Meanwhile, U.S. Representative Gregory Meeks is set to introduce legislation to roll back the tariffs. But with a Republican-controlled Congress, its chances of passing remain slim. For now, the world watches closely. Smashy Business is watching closely as Trump's aggressive trade policies reshape global markets.
Meanwhile, there was a tweet by Bill Ackman, who is an American billionaire hedge fund manager and the founder and chief CEO, basically chief executive officer of Pershing Square Capital Management. The tweet was really interesting. He wrote on X that Trump should reverse the tariffs on Israel because reportedly yesterday Israel removed all the tariffs on America. And his exact words were that Trump should incentivize the behavior he wants, not punish it. So it's very interesting how the world is working right now. There's like 3-4 things that we should consider. One, people are calling that there is going to be an imminent recession soon. Recession means that the economy will go into the gutter. People, the daily bread basket that people buy will become expensive. UAE, Saudi, Egypt, all the countries.
They will definitely survive. Yeah. And Magic, yeah. You know why I know this, and it's not just me making predictions. Yeah. It's because of the fact that what the UAE, what Qatar has done, what Saudi Arabia has done, is that they've built their own local markets.
Yeah.
You know, they don't need these taxed imported goods that much. They have their own markets. And not just they have their own markets, but they trade with each other. Yeah. So that in itself, it basically gives this region a lot of hope for what is to come. But I think what I find really ironic is that I remember when Trump was coming into power, a lot of people were excited because of the fact that they were like, oh my God, he's going to make the economy better. And it was not just American people who were excited or Middle Eastern people in America. It was Middle Eastern people, you know, in the Middle East. They were excited. They were like, Trump is going to make everything great again. And I think that now we're seeing that may not be the case.
His logic is that if he puts tariffs on other countries equal or like a little bit lower, because some countries have like 68% tariffs. I saw the whole list on multiple publications. They put out pictures also of those boards that he was carrying in the press conference when he was signing the executive order. If you look at those, there's like Angola has 68% tariffs on US. So whatever comes from US to Angola, they have to pay 69% more. And Trump's tariff now put 37% on them. That was the like highest number that I saw throughout the 180 countries list. So I have the alphabetical order of list, and I'll just read out the big ones that I see. So Afghanistan has 49% tariffs on US. In return, US has put 10% tariffs on them. So sometimes you look at the list, you'll be like, okay, this makes sense. But with countries he's good with, as we talked about it, that the allies that he has, Japan is one of the biggest allies. Apparently, Japan, the biggest debt to US is from Japan. So Japan gives a lot of money to the US through trade and all that. So they have put tariffs on them even. He didn't leave anyone out.
He didn't leave anyone. And I think, you know what I also find? I almost see it as a betrayal when I should not. It's the fact that, you know, we just heard like 1 week ago, the U.S. invested $1.4 trillion.
UAE invested.
The UAE is, you know, investing $1.4 trillion over the phase of 10 years in the U.S. But they too.
Yeah. We got 10% reciprocal tariffs as well. Saudi Arabia, 10%, 10%. So the major list of Middle Eastern countries got 10% back. But some of the countries were like highly affected. Syria, for example, I don't know what his problem is with Syria. He has a political problem. I think they already have sanctions in place on Syria. So now placing more tariffs on them with their economy already in turmoil, I don't know what he's trying to do. So the list somehow makes sense. If you look at it from the American perspective, from the global perspective, he is right in one or two examples.
I
but
think
out
the
of
Syria
the 180,
one makes sense.
Syria doesn't make
I think,
sense.
I'll
not
tell you,
the
I'll tell you why
region.
I think it makes sense, Majid. I think it's because of the fact that I, you know, in the end of the day, who would actually benefit from Syria still being down?
Yeah,
if you know, if there is a 40% tariff which is being enforced on Syria, you know, who will benefit from their economy never rising?
Yeah, everyone.
It's their neighbors.
Yeah.
It's their neighbors who are going to benefit from that. And, you know, we know that the U.S. and Israel, they have very close ties. Yeah. So I don't think that this was, I think this was a very intentional decision.
Yeah. Also, the oil producing countries, this sea tariffs, because U.S. has become one of the biggest powers in oil creation because they found new wells and oil fields in the last 4 or 5 years. So they're quite self-sufficient in terms of oil, and they export a lot of oil to a lot of countries now. So there is a surplus. So they're not really dependent on Middle Eastern oil as such as they were like 10 years or 15 years ago. But you have to still understand that it's not only oil exports that go and come, oil export and import. There's other trade as well. There's a lot of products that go from UAE to South America and a lot of products that come from the US. The funny thing is that indirectly we will get a little bit affected because if we do trade, yesterday we activated 2 SEPAs with Colombia and another country. So if we're doing trade with Colombia and US puts tariffs on them, they will have to like recover that money from somewhere. So their products will get expensive. And when we import them, eventually we will get affected. But as a region, if you look within the boundaries, there is a very low chance that we'll get affected because we have become quite self-sufficient, as you said, in the last 10 years, this region, UAE, Saudi especially, because UAE has right now in place 26 SEPAs with different countries. And so if we don't get stuff from US, we already have trade deals in place and we can get stuff from them. So, and that is already subsidized because there's no tariff. Sometimes there is very less tariff. India, one of the biggest exporters to the US and to the UAE. India also faces new tariffs from the US. But thankfully, we already have the very first cooperation agreement, the economic cooperation agreement was signed with India. So it makes it easier for UAE because they were very proactive. And also they committed $1.4 trillion. So I think when the May trip of Trump to this region comes, we will sign some deals and we will see that this effect, this 10% tariff will become negligible in the grander scheme of things.
And if anything, to be honest with you, I would say that UAE billionaires are actually benefiting from the US. And a very prime example of this is Hussein Sejwani. So Forbes actually just reported that Hussein Sejwani, the chairman of Dubai-based Damac Properties, has seen his wealth double to $10.2 billion, making him the richest, one of the richest businessmen in the Middle East. Now, his what's actually really impressive about all of this is that in 2024, they actually reported that his fortune was worth $5.4 billion. That is, that his wealth, it doubled. It really did double.
And the main thing is, I think, if we have, like, the whole story after this on the Mac, how he, like, gathered this new wealth through this EdgeNex thing, which is a data center thing. But the most important thing, I think, right now is that everyone will be looking at the tariffs. And April 5 will see some effects because the universal 10% tax is coming in effect on April 5. And then April 9, we'll see, like, regional ones. And, yeah. So, Hussein Sejwani, chairman of the way based Damac Properties, has seen as well double to 10.2, making him the richest businessman. The third richest businessman in the Middle East, right?
Yes.
After Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal, who is the richest, his fortune has surged to $5.5 billion in 2024, marking a nearly tenfold increase over the past 5 years.
Now, this boost comes as Damac expands into data centers, with Sejwani pledging $3 billion in Southeast Asia and $20 billion in the U.S., which I feel like we all heard about. Now, it was in partnership with President Donald Trump, and it was basically through Damac's data center subsidiary, EdgeNex, which was which recently acquired Finland-based Hyperco to strengthen its global footprint.
And Sajwani's Apit, wealth growth reflects Dubai's booming real estate and tech sectors, reinforcing the UAE's position as a hub for billionaires. Six UAE-based individuals were made it to the Forbes latest rich list, basically, as Dubai's property market continues to attract ultra-high net worth individuals. The global billionaire count is now 3,000?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they have a 3,000 billionaires, and they have a combined wealth of $16.1 trillion. And Middle Eastern business leaders are increasingly investing in tech infrastructure alongside real estate. Now, you know, Sejuani's expansion, what it really does signal to Majid is it's a shift in strategy. You know, like Gulf investors, they're looking beyond their traditional markets to, you know, to improve digital infrastructure. And we see that with how Sejuani went to the U.S. But more so than that, I think I find the entire story of Hussein Sejuani really interesting.
Yeah.
I, you know, it might be because I'm a part of the Damak, you know.
Yeah,
I live in Damak, so I love Damak. But I think what he did, he did something so different. And I think the story, I always find it really entertaining. I think I told you this before, how basically that land, Al Qudra, because Damak Hills 1, it's beside Town Square, I believe. That's where the Trump golf course is. And then Damak 2, it's all the way in Al Qudra.
Yeah.
Like it's near Al Marmoum, that area.
It's far from the main city.
Yeah,
if you don't know Dubai, it's far away, like half an hour drive at least, 40 minutes.
40 minutes. I would say 40 to 50 minutes.
Yeah.
But we're far from everything. We really are. But I remember, Majid, like the land 5 years ago, if you take a look at Damak Hills 2, it was sad.
Yeah.
It was like, yes, there were people living there, but it was completely empty. Now, if you come into the community and you see the homes, the people that live there, it's not just middle class people there anymore, by the way. It's also millionaires. The area that he's built, it's so like scenic. I feel like especially in like a market like the UAE, where everything is so material and everything is so flashy, for Sejuani to step in and say, hey, let me make something that feels scenic for people, that, you know, it like feels down to earth, that you're living a life basically outside of the city. And I think that's what he's done. And I think with the plot, the story of the plot of the land in Damak Hills 2, I find it so interesting because apparently that, like allegedly, that land was actually given to Tiger Woods.
Oh.
Yeah, it was basically given to Tiger Woods. And what happened was at some point, you know, he struggled with his divorce and he needed the money. So he actually sold that land to Hussein Sejuani.
Nice.
And obviously at that time, Sejuani got it for a very cheap price because, you know, Woods is like, oh my God, like I'm getting a divorce. Like I need my money right now. So I just think that Sejuani as a businessman, he really does know how to step in perfectly. And I don't know if anyone noticed this, by the way. I think that we really should have caught up with this. You know who noticed this? My mom. My mom was like, by the way, did you notice how after Hussein Sejuani invested $20 billion into data centers in the U.S., she went like, did you notice how Sheikh Mohammed, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed visited our like community? Remember that story, Majid, where we saw His Highness Sheikh Mohammed, we saw on Love in Dubai, and he was like in the Damak Hills 2 community center, and my mom was there, and she was like, we were all shocked. We were like, oh, this is like the end of the world. Like, what are you doing here?
But the interesting thing that I noticed was that as soon as he announced that $20 billion investment into US, we see him everywhere. Like, we see him at a lot of very important events. But then suddenly we saw him on every big news site. He was giving interviews to Bloomberg, to Reuters, to literally everyone. So that investment, he was in the limelight. He was like in the limelight at one of the Emirati billionaires. Mm. But he kind of like edged everyone out because we know Muhammad Al-Abbar is very present at a lot of events. Everyone talks about him. Whenever we do a story on him, everyone gets so many, it gets so many likes and engagement.
I would say he's most loved.
But yeah, now with Hussein Sejuani, we've seen this trend that people are more and more and more recognizing him. Not in the UAE. UAE, everyone knows him. Saudi, outside the world.
I think
everyone
he's
knows
in the
him.
Perfect way possible, by the way.
He
wasn't just doing a bunch of interviews and then he was like, okay,
$20
billion data centers. He went with the $20 billion data centers and then all of those interviews.
Yeah.
And I remember even for
very
me.
Very nice entry into the market. $20 billion, man.
I remember even for me, Majid, when I saw the video of him just like standing beside Trump casually and announcing it, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know,
this is big because no one
different.
Else was there.
Yeah.
He was there.
Nobody else has done this.
So yeah, you should have good connections. That's the lesson from this, because someday that connection after like 5 years, 10 years will work out for you. Talking about billionaires, we wanted to talk about Dubai robo taxis, but let's talk about another billionaire because I think it's a good segue. So Egypt's richest man, Nassef Sawaris, which is the brother of Naguib Sawaris, who has started a kind of a competition for us, Monify, kind of a media company, Monify. His brother, Nassef Sawaris, has officially relocated to Italy. Very interesting story. Stay with us to find out why. So according to registry filings, he's moved to Italy from the UK. And the billionaire co-owner of Aston Villa, which is an English Premier League club, previously listed the UK as his residence. But is among a growing number of high net worth individuals leaving Britain. So Sawaris, who holds Belgian, Egyptian and UAE citizenship, has been considering a move for months. His family office, NNS Group, had already registered in Abu Dhabi before his departure.
Now, the move reflects a broader wealth exodus from the UK as tax increases and new financial policies drive investors elsewhere. Now, Britain has imposed higher taxes on offshore wealth, inherited assets and private school fees, prompting business leaders to seek low tax alternatives. Now, countries like Italy, Singapore and the Middle East are drawing the ultra rich with favorable tax incentives.
And Italy, for instance, offers a 200,000 euros annual flat tax on foreign earnings, making it an attractive destination. Other wealthy figures such as biotech investor Christian Angermeyer and entrepreneur Basim Haider have also left the UK in search of better financial conditions.
Now, Sawaris' departure raises questions about his UK investments, including Aston Villa and his charitable foundation. Now, with Britain tightening tax policies, analysts predict more business leaders and investors may follow suit, now potentially impacting the UK's economic landscape. And you know what? It's not even a potentially, by the way.
Yeah.
They are moving here. And we've seen it. We've seen it.
Last year, we did this. We covered this report. 6,700 millionaires moved to UAE only, and nearly 60% of them came from the UK. So the problem with UK is very easily, if you want to understand it, that they used to have taxes. But if now, as a British national, you're outside the country and you have assets there, you're paying taxes on them even. Which doesn't make sense,
it
right?
Doesn't.
Because it's my asset outside the country.
Recently, who have we seen that has moved here? We've seen Lewis Morgan, the co-founder of Gymshark.
Yeah.
I remember there was even these like UK podcasters, they moved here. So everyone...
Nigeria's richest man moved his family office to Abu Dhabi. His daughter is handling that. So it's a good thing. It's a very good thing for our region.
It is worth mentioning that Nassef, I believe, he opened an office in Abu Dhabi.
He has the NNS is in Abu Dhabi. They opened the family office last year, or I think end of 23 or start of 2024. And when Naguib Sawaris came, we added this part that his brother is already based in Abu Dhabi. But Naguib is also working here, trying to get his investment. He's really tweeting great things about Dubai. On the Eid holiday, Hassan Sajwani is an Emirati influencer. He's very active on X because Elon Musk retweeted some of his posts and replied on him. So he's very active and famous.
You know what
he replied
story?
To him that Emirati's hospitality is the best in the world. That is why Dubai is winning. So he's very into UAE as well.
Yeah, but you know, Majid, you know what this story really does make me think of? You know the journalist Yusuf Amar?
Yeah.
The founder of CNTV?
He came here, right?
Yeah, he did. He was great. He was lovely. But I remember he posted this video and I just found it so interesting. And it was basically about Brexit. And what he was basically saying was he was like, you know, the European Union, their entire purpose and the reason why they initiated Brexit, it's because of the fact that they actually wanted to push immigrants out.
Yeah.
They wanted to push immigrants out of the UK. But what actually ended up happening is, you know, due to Brexit, the people who actually make the UK's economy flourish, who make the European's economy flourish, are foreigners.
Yeah.
And it's just it, I just the entire just the entire dichotomy around it. I found that that was a really interesting perception that he had made, and we're now seeing this in, you know, an Egyptian billionaire like Nassif Suarez. He too is realizing that, you know, these taxes are not for me. Yeah. I'm leaving.
Yusuf, the guy you're talking about, his argument is very grounded in reality, because I remember when Brexit was happening, it was like new for me. I was doing business at that point. And it was like the very first big story that happened in my time at the start. And everyone was complaining, because Brexit, when it happened, everyone was complaining that the healthcare system is flooded with immigrants. So we take an appointment for flu, and by the time we get that appointment, we're already cured. So their healthcare was under pressure, their economy was under pressure, their jobs were under pressure. And you're right that everyone wanted the immigrants out. That is why they did Brexit. But we've seen that it's not working out for them. But yeah, a lot of billionaires and a lot of tariffs. But let's move on to some technology news. The way is set to introduce self-driving taxis as Uber. And WeRide partner with the Roads and Transport Authority, which is famously known as RTA, to bring autonomous ride hailing to the city. The initiative will focus on pilot programs, safety protocols, and regulatory frameworks, marking a major step towards the way self-driving transport strategy, which aims for 25% of all trips to be autonomous by 2030.
Now, WeRide, a Chinese autonomous vehicle provider, secured the UAE's first national AV license in 2023 and has already launched robo-taxi services in Dubai. Now, Dubai will be the second city in the region to deploy its fleet. Now, with the autonomous vehicle market projected to reach $2.2 trillion by 2030, the UAE is positioning itself as a global leader in smart mobility and sustainability.
And Dubai Taxi Company and Bolt also plan to introduce autonomous taxis by early 2026. Bolt is a German company. They partnered with DTC, Dubai Taxi Company, last year, end of last year, to incorporate Bolt into Dubai Taxi Company. But they also want to introduce autonomous taxis by early 2026. So it will increase competition in the sector. The UAE ride-hailing market is expected to generate $204 million in revenue by the end of 2025 this year, reflecting growing demand for innovative transport solutions.
Now, Dubai's urban mobility transformation doesn't stop there. Electrical air taxis are also set to launch in early 2026. That's literally next year. Now, further details on the rollout of self-driving taxis, including timelines and expansion plans, will be announced in the coming months. It's the world is completely changing, and we are a part of it. You guys are a part of it. And it's just so insane. Insane to see flying taxis. I can't believe it's real.
I'm so happy that we're in a country where we will see it first, and then it will roll out to the world.
That's a good point.
It's like getting the iPhone or the newer version of the Samsung phone first, and then it rolls out to the world. So you can be like, we already know about it. Don't worry. We know how air taxis work. We know how autonomous vehicles work and how the robo-taxis will work. They're very famously called robo-taxis. I saw one in Abu Dhabi. I was recently in Abu Dhabi on Monday evening something. I went there for like 6-7 hours with my wife. I saw a taxi on the road, the robo-taxi, and I was like, I was scared, to be honest. I'll be very honest. I was like, what if? There's like 100 what ifs that come to your mind. But I think the very good thing that they did, they didn't bring it to Dubai first. They brought it to Abu Dhabi, because those roads, they don't have that kind of a rush hour traffic as Dubai. So Abu Dhabi is very peaceful and calm and very well-managed traffic. The speed limits are also like, if it says 80, you drive at 79. You don't drive at 19 above. So it's working there. A lot of people are using it. There's a lot of influencers, a lot of media companies which went and experimented with those taxis. They were quite safe. They maneuvered well. They drove at a very nice speed.
But
so
wait,
didn't
Majid,
feel uncomfortable.
Just so you know, everyone here is not confused. What actually makes a robo-taxi different than
There's no driver in the taxi. So you just book a taxi, you go, you open the back door, you sit, and you just put in the location,
and
it'll take
you. And this already exists.
Yeah. So it already exists in Abu Dhabi. And they will now do a pilot program. They'll go through the whole safety protocols before.
Can you buy one?
I don't know.
Honestly, and you know why I'm specifically asking this?
You can buy autonomous cars. I think there is maybe one autonomous car in the world. I think...
I know that Tesla can drive.
Yeah, Tesla can drive.
But you know why? The reason why I'm so impressed, I always have this fear that, you know, what if I become one of those people who drives and I'm like really sleepy and I just crash?
Yeah.
Like, what about when you're really sleepy and tired? Yeah. Like, what do you
then
do?
Then it can help you, right?
This can genuinely help you.
But with Tesla, the great thing is, even when you sit in a Tesla taxi in Dubai or in Tesla Uber, you see the whole map. It has a very nice navigation system. I'm always curious what's happening in the screen. So throughout my time, I'm looking at the screen. It tells you even if there is a bike on the road. It has a very nice GPS system which measures the size and the speed of the vehicle. So everything is very nicely mapped out. Obviously, every technology has some kinks that can be worked out. There's some small problems. But I think this region and this city and this country especially is very nice for its implementation because the rules are so strict that everyone drives. There is like one or two people on the road. You must have seen them. Everyone sees them who do rash driving sometimes.
Mm.
But like 95% of the time, you see like people driving in lanes, not switching lanes like aggressively. Because I've been to Qatar recently and I went to Saudi Arabia. The driving there is scary. Those people think they're in a Fast and Furious movie. They're like, I'm like, no, thank you. I'm happy in UAE. Whereas even the rashest driver that I've seen on the road at least has some sense.
There's crazy drivers everywhere.
Yeah.
There's crazy.
But
I think there's a bit of bias.
I think comparatively, we have some like lesser amount. There in Saudi Arabia, whenever I sat in the taxi, I was reading Kolzala. Please save me. It's really, you'll go to Saudi Arabia, you'll realize what I'm talking about. Because my first thought when I was going to Saudi Arabia, I was like, it will be like exactly a lot of things will be like UAE, right? Because Middle East, two big economies, it's completely different ballgame.
Mm.
So with that, thank you very much. That's it up for today.
Thank you so much for watching. Thank you for tuning into the Smashy Business Show. Make sure to follow us across all social media channels at Smashy Business and stay ahead with our daily newsletter. You'll find the subscription link in the description.
And this has been a Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. A big shout out to our 1.5 million monthly listeners across all platforms and shows that we do. You make this possible if you're one of them. Thank you very much. We appreciate you. Do tune into our social media today because you will see all the reactions, all the updates, all the follow-ups on Trump's tariff if you're interested. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.